You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape. This is This Week in Cardiology for December 18th, 2015. This week, I'm going to talk about ezetimibe, bioresorbable stents, guideline adherence, cardiac rehabilitation, the American Board of Internal Medicine comes up again, and some top 10 stories for 2015. First up, ezetimibe. This week, an FDA advisory committee heard the evidence, discussed the evidence, and debated the evidence about ezetimibe for the secondary prevention of cardiac events. In a 10 to 5 vote, the committee recommended against expanded use of ezetimibe with statins for the reduction of CV events. Now, most of those voting no said the IMPROVE-IT trial results were just not substantial enough. Dr. Milton Packer likened it to a coin flip. He said the trial was so close that if done again, he asked, would it come out with the same findings? Now, the thing to me is that this is a little late. Ezetimibe's been used for many years. Millions of dollars have been made. And now a committee meets and says, no, there's not enough evidence for this indication. I just wonder whether if we had waited before expanded use, if we had waited for the data, how much money would have been saved? Why don't we wait for data on these sorts of things? Next is bioresorbable stents. Based on the findings of a meta-analysis published in Lancet, I'm pretty sure that bioresorbable stents, at least in their current form, will not be the next biggest thing in cardiology. The meta-analysis included six trials that compared bioresorbable stents to drug-eluting stents. In the primary outcome, which was target lesion revascularization, there was no significant difference. However, definite or probable stent thrombosis was 2 times more likely in the resorbable stent. Most thromboses occurred in the first 30 days. Also, in-device late lumen loss was greater for the resorbable stents. Now, the Lancet editorialist said we shouldn't abandon this technology. They wrote that this is only the first generation of bioresorbable stents, and future generations may improve over and overcome these kinds of problems. They pointed to the improvements in the first generation drug-eluting stents. Now, what's weird to me is that this has had CE mark in Europe since 2011. So 4 years of use in Europe, but none in the United States. And it really striking the difference that patients on the two continents experience in terms of interventional cardiology, and especially devices. Now, think not only about the European use of these likely inferior stents, but what about renal denervation and left atrial appendage occlusion? Next is adherence to guidelines. This is a hot topic for me. A research team from Beth Israel Hospital analyzed the Pinnacle database, and they found that there was a long way to go in terms of guideline adherence in the United States when it comes to AFib, heart failure, and CAD guidelines. Now, they included the years 2009 through 2012 in lots of patients, more than 650,000 patients. They found adherence rates, mostly to the use of prescription medications, varied a lot, and it was lower than the researchers liked. I urge you to take a look at this study and think, I have a lot of problems with this sort of analysis. An example is the anticoagulation guideline measure for AFib. Now, they found that only 58% met the guideline goal. But the problem is that whether or not a patient takes an anticoagulant is up to the patient. In the AFib guideline statement, shared decision-making is recommended. It's a 1A recommendation. So if that's the case, how can there be any right amount, correct amount, of anticoagulation use in the population? And you could argue that it's the same sort of thing for ACE inhibitors and beta blockers. We need to find better quality measures because as healthcare changes to one where patients are more in control and shared decision-making becomes greater utilized, these sorts of metrics will not tell the quality story. Next up is cardiac rehab. Now, no matter the type of cardiac rehab program, women with coronary artery disease are often not following through with cardiac rehab. These are the findings of a four-year pragmatic trial from six centers in Toronto. The findings, which were published in the Mayo Clinic Proceedings Journal, are important because the women who did finish cardiac rehab had better functional capacity. This is a neat trial. The pragmatic trial is kind of cool. And they compared three types of cardiac rehab programs. So mixed sex regular cardiac rehab, supervised women-only cardiac rehab, and then also home-based cardiac rehab. The chief finding, the one that struck me most, was that only 55% of the female participants completed the 24-week program. I think this is a disturbing and a bad finding because cardiac rehab is a fundamental treatment of coronary artery disease. Recall that coronary disease is a systemic disease, and whereas bypass or stents address focal lesions, cardiac rehab addresses the systemic factors that actually cause atherosclerosis in the first place. We have to do better at promoting cardiac rehab. Next up is the ABIM. Once again, the American Board of Internal Medicine has given ground, conceded significantly. This time, it's the lifting of the requirement that we earn MOC credits for practice assessment, patient safety, and patient voice. These things were lifted until the year 2018. Now, these changes, along with three other changes, which were approving more CME outside of the MOC type CME, allowing subspecialists like myself to certify only in the field that we practice, and at least talking about changing the high-stakes 10-year examination has made ABIM look like a way different organization than it was just a year ago. What a difference a year makes for ABIM. In my opinion, and I know some maybe disagree, I think the ABIM has conceded enough to survive. I think they were really on the ropes at the beginning of this year. But think about this idea. Most doctors now in the U.S. are employed. Most of us get a certain amount of dollars to cover our CME. I get a certain amount of dollars, and it would easily cover the recertification process. So that barrier is kind of taken away. And the fact that subspecialists only have to recertify in the field that they practice, this is a really big thing that takes a lot of steam out of the opposition, I think. Finally, let's review some stories from 2015. First up, Dr. Eric Topol, editor-in-chief of Medscape and a leader in technology, reviews what he feels are the top 10 tech advances of 2015. I put together what I felt like were the top 10 cardiology stories of 2015. Take a look at that. See if you agree, disagree. Feel free to leave a comment. Dr. Bob Harrington and Mike Gibson will review their picks for the top 10 stories in cardiology for 2015. That will come up next week, so look for that. And now some housekeeping. This will be the last This Week in Cardiology for 2015. We'll take 2 weeks off, and then the next podcast will be on January 8th, 2016. Also, I wanted to alert you to take a look at our URL. You can find the list of the stories that I mentioned at www.medscape.com/TWIC. That's TWIC, or This Week in Cardiology. So until next year, I want to say thank you. Thank you for your support. I appreciate it. I'm grateful for your comments, and I'll see you again in 2016. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.